Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
Hi, I'm Amanda Newton, and welcome to this latest episode of our Globally Speaking podcast. I'm president of Global Content Services at RWS, and I'm very, very honored to be joined today by three exceptional leaders in the AI and tech space. We'll be grateful if you wouldn't mind starting, Pia, with a quick introduction to yourself and a bit of, if you can share a bit of your journey of what's led you into this AI and tech space.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me on this podcast. It is truly an honor. Like Amanda said, my name is Pia. My journey into localization was not traditional. I started in college with a degree in international affairs and geopolitics, but I felt it was too bureaucratic and slow, so I pivoted quickly into telecom instead and rode the dot-com bubble until it burst. Then I transitioned into localization. I thought, I grew up in Europe. I speak three languages. What can I do? And I started working at an SLV, then moved to a larger MLV a few years later, now, which is RWS. And then I was managing a pretty big portfolio of clients. And my journey at Uber started right around 2018. Managing the localization program management team at Uber. It's a centralized function. And when this AI revolution started, I was tapped to lead a team to engage with all things AI from the localization perspective, as well as the LLM evaluation perspective. So because of the background that I had in localization, it was a good transition for me. And it's been an amazing space where I cannot believe how much I've learned here at Uber and how much of technology insights I've learned in the last year. So it's been a tremendous journey and I can't wait for the rest to come.
Yeah, very interesting. We've got a similar background, Pia. Giselle, do you want to pick it up next?
Yeah, sure. Again, thank you for having me on this podcast too. I'm very, very honored, and it's always great to meet new people and get connected. I lead the local language and language experience and technology team at Sage. I actually joined Sage when fresh out of college a little while ago now as a technical writer to start. I went to college for creative writing, so. And nowhere in my, you know, ideas was it to be, I'd be in tech or I'd be leading AI initiatives or anything like that. When I was a technical writer, I really was interested in system optimization and efficiency, like how can we make workflows better for everybody? And so about 3 years after I was a tech writer, I pivoted into content operations and then later localization, which dovetail nicely together. And so I've always been, once I got to localization is when, as many of us, we get our introduction into AI and through machine technologies and translation memories and everything else going on. And then, of course, with AI that's just come out recently, there's been even more interest in my work and my team and what we do. Right now, I'm helping to lead part of our co-pilot initiative for Sage, which is our digital assistant throughout the product. I'm in particular leading the part where we are able to use Copilot to surface answers from our help content for all kinds of, for all kinds of questions for all kinds of users and customers and partners in all languages. So it's been a really interesting ride.
Very good journey. Very interesting. And Jennifer?
Hi. Again, thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to be here among other women in AI. Yeah. It's rare to have this opportunity, so it's very exciting. I did start in languages, in translation. I was from the very beginning, I was very sure that my roadmap would be all about languages and communication and breaking barriers, so like a traditional linguist. But then when you're curious, you start seeing other opportunities, you start seeing other very interesting things happening in the field. So I went from a translator to an entrepreneur. I created a very small SLB back in Spain. I wanted to understand how you can grow a business, how you can do things on your end. And then after that, I got more and more interested in efficiencies, but also in terms of quality, how we can measure quality, how we can manage quality. And I started then working for a big client, at Expedia, as a quality manager. And because of my curiosity, and I realized how difficult it was to actually define quality, measure quality, and manage it, I started a PhD with the objective to write a thesis about how translation and localization quality management was done in big corporations, and especially thinking at that moment how to evaluate neural machine translation models. So the first AI that we used in translation was NMT models. So that was very interesting, because by the moment that when I finished that PhD, LLMs hadn't exploded yet, but I already was very interested in how we could evaluate neural machine translation engines and which kind of metrics we can use, human evaluation, automatic evaluation. So when LLMs came, it was more interesting, and my curiosity was also exploding, because I could see the opportunity to take everything I had learned on evaluating neural machine translation models and see what can we use for LLMs, what is different, what is the same. And also knowing that with AI and LLMs, you can also start thinking about, can we use them also to evaluate? Can we use them to review? So there's a lot of open questions. There is a lot of research being done at the moment on that particular space. And I'm very grateful that I can carry out with that research at Spotify. I've been there for 2 years, and my title there is Localization Quality Program and Innovation Manager.
I think it's really, really, really impressive to see all the backgrounds on this podcast today. And it's really inspiring, I hope, to a lot of women listening to us to see the journeys that you've all made. As you know, the industry, the tech and AI, and even the localization industry at a management level have been really male-dominated over the years. Have you seen a shift in that recently, or has any event or inspired you to think differently and think that women have a chance to really rise to the top here? I don't know, Jennifer, do you want to pick that up first?
Yes, sure. I do see a little bit of a shift there, because translation and localization traditionally actually have had more women in the industry. So there is already like a good shift there. And then yes, technology and AI, the traditional AI has been more male dominated. But now that we have the uses of AI for language, for different languages, for content creation, for content generation, I'm seeing these two groups talking to each other. And I'm seeing a lot of synergies, a lot of collaboration between the experience that we have in terms of languages and how translation works, and the experience that you can bring on how AI as a such works. So I started to see more like a mixture, and I'm very excited to see that other women like myself see in AI an exciting new venue that is quite unexplored and is very ready for any, with almost anybody that actually wants to learn, to go inside and go and learn.
Yeah. How about you, Pia? What's your thoughts?
Actually, I remember being at this panel at Lockworld last year in Monterey, where we had four women CEOs. And the conclusion of that panel, as a matter of fact, was actually we were trending where there were more women leaders in the industry. But all of a sudden, it's shifted back down again, where the leadership is still very male dominated. So, yes, traditionally the translation and localization industry is mostly females at the sort of the middle layer in the translator and linguist layer. But I think especially now with new technology coming out, and I say the word new, but really AI is not new, women have always been more hesitant to dive in. So it's still something where we need to encourage other women to try out this new technology so that they can be in a position to use it again and again and again and inspire themselves to continue this journey of learning. Even though we are curious human beings, we're not curious enough. We just don't just go for it. So I think it's very important for us as women to dive in, to dig in, and to really be a little bit more carefree than we have been. We are really the worker bees, and we need to start thinking about pushing ourselves into this arena more because we are the ones who are doing it. And I think by doing that, it'll enable more women onto these leadership roles that we need. So that's my perspective right now.
Great. Giselle, what's your thoughts here?
Oh, I have so much to respond to. What I love about what Pia said is that often, you know, I love the worker bee thing because I always tell my team, like, I want to be close to the worker bees. I want to know what we're all doing. I want to be a worker bee sometimes, even though I'm not anymore, right? But at that level, I have seen the most... I've had the most support from women at that level always. And it's been really great to build intergenerational relationships with people and come to them for professional and personal advice too. My career started at Sage, so I don't have a lot of reference outside of myself, unfortunately. But when I started, it was a team of just 8 women in technical writing. And it was really amazing to get all that support and be mentored over and over again. And many leaders, at, you know, director and VP levels here are women, but all of them are focused on getting things done. And I love that about working with women and trying to get, like, collaborating really well to get those sorts of things done. So to that extent, like, I don't know too much about the shift or the not shift or what the overall trends are, but I definitely see a lot of opportunity. And it really is about going for it. So I always recommend everyone just, if there's something not being done, just go for it. And to trust in yourselves as experts, because I think we don't do that enough. And we really could build that confidence and show up more confidently into spaces where people act that way, even if they're not.
I wanted to add something to what Bea mentioned about the shift. And actually, yeah, that's very right that one thing is where we're looking at, right? If we're looking at leadership positions, it's one story. And then we're looking at other medium level is a different story, right? So I think, Pia, you're completely right. One story is, again, the leadership part, which has always been like that, even though then the rest of the positions are female dominated. The shift that I've seen is more on the research or the working piece, where in the research part, I used to see many more male researchers, especially in AI and LLP and language processing. And I'm seeing more and more women researching. And that's the part I'm very excited, because we all need role models. I think one key part here to be able to have more women doing this is because they see other women doing it and they get inspired. So that's the part I've seen, that the shift is going. It's very interesting. And I hope that that also means that eventually it will go up.
Yeah. You're seeing it at the ground level. That's great.
I think, you know, it's definitely something that, you know, in my role here at RWS, heading up the women chapter, it's something that we put a lot of focus and attention on. You know, how can we really encourage women to move from those mid-management positions and take the risk and put themselves out there to really promote themselves up to more senior leadership positions? And, you know, listening to... people like yourselves talking about your backgrounds and your experiences are really what inspire other women to push themselves forward into higher and more challenging positions in their companies.
I think it's important that we have this growth from Jennifer's level all the way up, because the decisions on technology are made at the senior level. And so if we don't allow women to grow, first of all, if they're not being encouraged to take on these positions, learning then that means eventually the technology is going to be, the decisions on technology are going to be made by men continually. So yes, it starts at these lower levels and it just needs to continue growing so that women can get to these little position, leadership positions to make those decisions on technology and the way they are being guided.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've come together today, really, the podcast is to celebrate International Women's Day. But are there any real specific achievements or successes that you can talk about that have really inspired you on your journey? Are there any individuals or specific events that have really stood out in your journey?
Frankly, I've always been a doer. I've always been focusing on the task at hand, looking at what my role is in any of the organizations that I have been in and thinking strategically about how to advance that role, and really hadn't thought about my situation as a woman or my role as a woman in the work that I was doing. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, I had an epiphany again last year when I was going into this AI journey. I learned a lot at this recent Lock World that I mentioned before from the CEO of Language.io, Heather, when she said that these models, all of these engines being trained by men, is creating a bias in the output. And that for me was like, oh my God, I didn't even realize it, because I'm a technologist. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that everything we do is as efficient and as effective as possible, as automated as possible, as fast as possible. But thinking about what she said, especially in the space of AI, where we're training these models and they're being trained by men, I was thinking, oh my God, that is absolutely true. So from that moment on, I've tried to open up the perspective of everyone around me to make sure that we have a more sort of level and even, especially gender equalization there, because we need to infuse that difference of gender and diversity into the engines that we are training. They need to be representative of us as a people. And that for me was an epiphany. So that, I mean, I don't want to say I didn't learn other things that sort of framed who I am. This one was the most recent epiphany, and I'm really grateful for that panel at Lock World. And I thank Heather for the work that she's doing.
Yeah. It was a really inspiring panel of leaders there. Yeah. How about you, Jennifer?
I think what Pia is saying is very powerful. I think precisely when something that happened very quickly when we start seeing the results of large language models is that they were biased. That the results were biased, not just with gender, but also, you know, with many other things. And we discovered that actually these models are learning from us as a society. And our society is not equal. And the data they're learning is as biased as we are as a society. So we're seeing that. It's like these models are learning from us as a society, and they're learning our own biases, and then they're also being trained by men. So now, of course, there is a lot of work being done on trying to correct that, trying to refine and correct that into so that it's not so not so obvious. But here we see the other part of this data. It's huge in some languages, in some cultures, we have a lot of data, so we can actually, we have the resources to be able to select which kind of unbiased data we want to feed the engines. But then we also have languages and cultures where there's not so much available there, and it's even more biased. And we don't have the ability to actually being able to feed the engines the kind of data that we would like it to see. In some cases, because it's also a reflection of the culture. So in some languages where the culture is already biased, where the language is already biased, what can we do about that? So I think it's like a big question that a lot of people are trying to solve. Can the large language models be better than we are as a society? Because if they can't, they are just a reflection of our own faults instead of being an inspiration of what we could accomplish. So it's a big question mark, but yes, I also think that is something that we don't know if it's going to happen or not. And otherwise, we'll need a lot of engineers and a lot of people like us working to make these engines better than us.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it starts off with awareness. And I think, you know, it is very true. We're all aware that we are creating bias in those language models that are being developed. It's now around how we try to make that shift, because it's not it's not biased just against women, but it's against underrepresented parts of our society. And there's a big opportunity here to allow us to really drive some very special change. But it's how we go about doing that. That's still the challenging question.
Exactly. So the opportunity here, being optimistic, is there is so much we can do, especially with underrepresented languages, communities, that potentially, you know, if we use them for the good, we could use this large language model for.
So if you look back over your careers, what advice would you have given your younger self, you know, if you were starting out now? What advice would you be giving to yourself? It's a very different, fast-paced, rapidly moving world. What would you be saying to Pia if she was 23 and starting out now?
Yeah, Giselle said it the best. Be curious. Yeah. Really dig in, really jump into the space. I was very lucky in that SLV. They basically just pushed me into the arena, and by happenstance, I found the founders of Women in Localization were in the Silicon Valley, and I was able to learn a ton from them. And so that means to me, basically, seek out mentorship and build your networks. Just because we're doing our own little things in our companies doesn't mean that you can't reach out via LinkedIn to someone and say, hey, I'm super curious to learn about what you're doing and how you're doing it. All of us women are natural mentors. We really like helping others. And that's, for me, the most key thing. The second thing for me is just to continue learning. I love, Jennifer, your journey into a PhD. I wish I could do a PhD because you really get into the granularity of things. And that is super important to understand that in order to take that out and be able to form the big picture strategy. So continuous learning, adaptability. The most important thing, I think we don't give ourselves enough credit, is to have confidence in ourselves and advocate for ourselves. We always talk about us having imposter syndrome, and we need to get over that. Yes. This is a journey. Life is a journey. We're going to learn things along the way, and we just have to have the courage to put ourselves out there. Men do this continually. They don't care about this imposter syndrome so much. We are very careful about what we say, how we say it, and when we say it. We need to have more courage and just go for it. That's what I'd like to say to my younger self.
Yeah, exactly.
Fake it until you make it. I agree. I think women have a lot of trouble doing this. Women, we do have a lot of trouble. Just the word fake sounds so bad to us. We don't want to fake anything. We'd rather not try if we don't feel that we are 100% prepared for the role. And we tend to forget that we don't need to be 100% prepared for any role, that we can be 80%, 60%, and we will learn it afterwards, right? But we tend to be very perfectionist in that sense. I think going back, it is true that being so curious and be a little bit fearless, it helped me a lot. And especially in my case, because I didn't grow up in a big city. I'm from Spain, but I was from the Canary Islands. So I was in a very small environment. And the only thing that I could see around me is that people that studied translation were teachers or maybe they would work at the airport because they could speak languages. And that was what I could see around me. I couldn't see anything else, anything bigger. And I already had this mindset that, well, this is what is it, because I'm in an island, I don't have the money to go outside, and these big companies, big people are not going to talk to me, I'm too small. I wish I would have known before that there are organizations like Women in Localization where you can learn so much, and it doesn't matter where you're from, and that you can have an online mentor that maybe lives in Silicon Valley, and that, believe it or not, that lady is going to be so happy to tell you and to mentor you because she's going to love having that opportunity. And I actually remember that I felt quite stuck in my career for several years, and it was only until I got a mentor that basically, I think their role was basically to tell me, you can do this, you can do more, you haven't reached your full potential. I think having that person repeating that over and over and over again made such a huge impact that, you know, I spent like 7 years without any promotion, 7 years in the same role, doing exactly the same thing, no promotions whatsoever. And then I had a mentor, and in 3 years, I finished my PhD, I changed roles, I started doing a lot of things, and yeah, it was because I also needed somebody to remind me that I was able to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, hopefully a lot of people listening to the podcast will really appreciate a lot of the honesty that's been expressed today. I think our journeys are never in one straight path or going in one clear direction. We often have to take a lot of knockbacks along the way. I know I've taken a lot of knockbacks along on my journey, and I do believe as women we are extremely resilient, and we can, you know, we can come back and find our way forward despite those knockbacks we face. You know, thank you very much for joining me. I could sit on this podcast and listen to you both speaking for many more hours. But I think, you know, the three C's are the things I'm taking away. You know, let's be curious. Let's always be interested in learning and pushing ourselves further. Let's challenge ourselves and really not accept the status quo, and put ourselves out there to really use our courage to drive ourselves forward. And I think, you know, there's no limits to what we can achieve. We are really, as we said, the foundations of this industry, and we now really need to continue to push ourselves to be the leaders going forward. So thank you very much for your time today, and thanks for you for joining me on this Globally Speaking podcast. And I hope you all look forward and join us on our next one.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.